Help her.
Help her. Help her.
Help her.
Help her. Help her.
Help her.
Autumn, 1876. Biggleswade, a candlelit parlour. Winifred had never been afraid at one of John's spirit circles before. Her brother wasn't one for theatrics and thrills. His spirit circles were sedate, sometimes sombre affairs. His patrons were educated customers of his bookshop, respectable, true believers, not thrill seekers. But Winifred was not the only one to be afraid that night. As she glanced around the circle of guests, jagged shards of candlelight flickered across their faces, familiar faces transformed, twisted, or petrified in fear. Mr. Kite's plump face was unusually pale. His eyes darted away from Winifred's as he shifted in his seat. Mr. and Mrs. Dell's were unusually inanimate. They were stiff, their faces mask-like. Elderly Jane Clark was biting on her paper-thin lower lip. A single drop of blood shone in a flurry of light as a draught disturbed the candle flames. John himself was trembling, his head cast down in a manner completely out of character for him. And the thing that had just frightened them all suddenly returned. The voices.
Help her.
Help her. Help her.
Help her.
Help her. Help her.
Help her.
Please hear us. Listen. Please hear us. Please
hear us.
Please listen.
Listen.
She needs justice.
She needs justice.
Justice. She
cannot rest.
We implore you.
We implore you. I
implore
you.
She's in the water.
She's in the water.
She's in the water. The water.
She's so cold.
She's cold.
Sorry. Murder.
Murder.
She's cold.
Murder.
John's head snapped back up.
Don't break the circle,
he commanded. Winifred felt Mr. Kite's grip on her hand tighten.
Listen,
John instructed.
We are blessed tonight. Robin Ashpole has brought us a gift. A gift that you can all experience. Not just the sensitive. Listen. Listen, friends.
Winifred had never heard anything like it. Not even when she'd visited a charlatan theatrical seance in Cambridge. This was real. They were hearing the voices of the dead, of the dearly departed, and they had a message. A message for them all. Winifred's fear was slowly scrubbed away by the waves of sound. From the voices, the urgency in some, the matter-of-factness of others. They demanded to be heard. But what did it all mean? As the voices subsided, John began to speak again, but in his trance voice, gruffer than his waking voice. This was the voice of Robin Ashpole, his spirit guide.
I could not stop these voices being heard. I do not want to stop them. They demand your attention. The town and environs of Biggleswade are not safe. There is a murderer loose, a cruel and unusual killer. He strikes on the highway, but is no footpad, nor common robber. For the last 20 years, he has plied an evil trade. In lane and highway, sometimes alone, sometimes with accomplices. I will reveal his name to John and John alone when the time is right. There will be no more spirit dealings tonight.
Then suddenly John's trance was over. His eyes snapped open. He was alert.
Well, that was a revelation.
He declared. After prayers were said, the circle was broken. Winifred was concerned to see all of the guests accept a glass of brandy before leaving far earlier than they would do normally. John seemed not to notice their reticence to linger. He was full of the fire of spirit, as he liked to call it, the slightly manic mood he sometimes exhibited after a spirit circle or when completing automatic writing exercises in his study.
It's got to be the drowning at Watermill Bridge, the dreadful murder of that young girl back in 57 that the spirits were talking about. They sounded young. I told you, Winnie. I told you that it was no coincidence. These deaths happening on the roads around here. And now we hear from the spirit companions of the girl herself. Murder, they said. Murder. I told you so at the time, did I not?
Yes, you did, John, Winifred admitted. But Winifred was wary. There was something about all of this that she did not like, did not trust. It felt like Robin Ashpole was leading her brother on a merry dance. She narrowed her eyes and quietly cursed the spirit who had begun to guide John through his spiritualist adventures. Welcome. Welcome to Weird in the Wade. Today's episode is the first part in a fascinating and twisting tale of Victorian spiritualism, ghost sightings, and how that led me to discover the truth of Murder Bridge. Now, you don't have to have listened to the earlier episode from February about Murder Bridge to enjoy this one, but you might want to go back and listen to it anyway, especially as the episode has an interview with Wayne of Eerie Edinburgh fame towards the end of it. The scene at the Spirit Circle I open today's episode with is one I imagined. We don't know exactly how John Francis Hunt received his messages from beyond the grave. We know that sometimes he received messages whilst alone, but that he was also a passionate and vocal spiritualist who continued to champion the belief even when it became less fashionable towards the end of the 19th century. So it seems very likely that he held spirit circles. And we know through a letter that he wrote to Scotland Yard that he believed that the death of a girl found drowned beneath a bridge along the Potton Road was in fact murder. And not an accident, as the authorities had decided. So buckle up for the first part of a thrilling story of Victorian true crime, ghosts, spiritualism, and the law. Previously on Weird in the Wade. Great, I get to say it again. Previously on Weird in the Wade. So back in February 2024, I told the story of Biggleswade's Murder Bridge. Now, it's a vague kind of tale. First of all, no one can decide which bridge on the Potton Road, just outside Biggleswade, Murder Bridge actually is. There's a bridge near the hospital on the corner of the common, but there's also Watermill Bridge, which is on a bend as you approach Sutton from Biggleswade. The bend is known locally as Murder Bend. Local children know the story of Murder Bridge, or at least they did in the 80s and 90s, and one or both of the bridges have been known as Murder Bridge since at least the 1950s. I discovered a newspaper article which referred to Murder Bridge. The generally accepted story goes that during the Second World War, a nurse had been found murdered under the bridge and now haunted that place. She would leap out, cape flying, and scare away children. The bridge nearest the hospital seemed to lend itself best to this story. But I found no evidence of any murders or suspicious deaths associated with those bridges. I did find a 19th century murder on the Potton Road, but the victim was a man, and it seemed to be highway robbery, and no bridge was mentioned. In the end, I concluded that a real 1940s murder of a nurse in the nearby grounds of the Three Counties Asylum, as it was known then, could have inspired the story, and I assumed we would never know the truth. How wrong I was. One thing I've learnt since researching Weird in the Wade is that communities have longer memories than you'd realise, and most stories have a pearl of truth at their heart that, when discovered, only gleams the brighter thanks to the sands of time. Uncovering the truth. I stumbled across a breadcrumb trail to the truth, or at least some of it, completely by accident, which is often the way. I was searching for stories related to Pegnut Wood in Sutton, the tiny hamlet between Potton and Biggleswade, with a beautiful 13th century packhorse bridge. This was for the Patreon episode about Pegnut Wood. The story I found was from the Biggleswade Chronicle printed on the 6th of January, 1922. At first, it looked uninspiring. It was part of the minutes reported from the December hospital board meeting in Biggleswade. The meeting was attended by the matron of the hospital, the clerk and chairman, as well as board members. The first item seemed to be quite ordinary, about fruit and nuts being generously donated for patients over Christmas. Then came the unusual item of a ghost story on the agenda. Mr. Manson, the chair, and Mr. Chandler, the clerk, together told what was described as a frightening story. It went something like this. A ghost sighting. On a fine winter's day in December, a group of cyclists were enjoying the sunny but crisp weather, out on a ride along the lanes and tracks around Sutton, Potton and Cockayne Hatley. I don't have the names of these cyclists, nor the size of their group, but let's say the lead cyclist is called Ed and his friend Tom is with him amongst a few others. They are friends who survived the First World War and who for their own well-being and health regularly cycle in the countryside as a way to stave off the vivid images and sounds that crowd their minds after the horrors of the trenches. As the sun began to sink in the afternoon sky, they decided to head back home to Biggleswade, cycling along the Potton Road. They took the bend, now known as Murder Bend, and continued towards the hospital. When suddenly, out of the hedge, on the south side of the road, by the corner of the common, something large, grey and voluminous sprang out in front of them. Ed, startled by the size and suddenness of this apparition, came tumbling off his bike to the side of the road. Tom and the others all stopped, confused and a little shaken. All had witnessed the grey, amorphous shape appear out of nowhere and then disappear just as suddenly and inexplicably. They were all baffled. Ed had a few scratches to his arm and head, and it was decided to seek help at the Checkers Inn, just on the other side of the road from them. The Checkers did well, being opposite the busy hospital, and was still open, it being just before 3 p.m, so the cyclists were gladly admitted, and Ed was given some rudimentary first aid for his scratches. Being in shock, the cyclists willingly told the landlord and staff and customers what they had witnessed, something which they'd be more reluctant to do once the shock wore off. They described what seemed impossible. A grey cloaked creature had leapt out from nowhere and then disappeared whilst in the middle of the road. Ed expected the crowd listening to laugh or chide him for being silly, but instead a cold shiver ran through the group and a whisper rippled around them. A whisper that Ed did not like the sound of at all. Then the landlord spoke.
You're not the first to encounter a grey spectre at that bridge. No, we've had customers refuse to walk home alone after dark because of that grey ghost that appears to them. Bertie Darrington's lad, Arthur, hid in the hedge next to the hospital gate in terror after encountering that grey ghost last month. He was there until the constable discovered him and took him for a vagrant. Scared off to death, Arthur was, by the sight of the grey ghost. He's not left his home in Potton since and is under the doctor for his sickness since his encounter.
Now, whether the majority of these sightings occurred after customers had been drinking in the Checkers rather than before, as in the case of the cyclists, I don't think we'll ever know. But this is the story that the hospital board share. It's hard to tell if it's told as a kind of Christmas ghost story or if there's genuine concern about others experiencing the phantom, especially as they do mention that a man from Potton was found in the hedge by the hospital gate in a state of fear and is still unwell after his ordeal. But the story doesn't end there. No, there is speculation from the clerk, Chandler, as to who this grey ghost is, because he remembers the late Mr. John Francis Hunt, bookseller, printer and stationer of Biggleswade, as having been entwined in the story of a young woman who was murdered and found beneath that bridge. Chandler says the murder of the young woman happened many years ago. He goes on to say that Hunt claimed to know who the murderer was. As you can imagine, reading this, my blood ran cold. It appeared that there had indeed been a murder. After all, I also had a name connected with the murder, John Francis Hunt.